When preparing for this Satna Dhamma talk, I came across a beautiful discourse in the Anguttara Nikaya. Namely, in the collection of Satna the Eighth, and in that Satna collection, there's the set of the first 50 discourses, and there it's the second discourse. Now, without Satna revealing at this point, Satna as yet, the title of the discourse, of Satna, that discourse from the Anguttara Nikaya, there are 8 causes and conditions that will contribute to the arising of a very particular factor, and for you to figure out what this factor might be. Now, allow me to mention those certain factors and explain them a little. Well, first mention them and then later on explain them. The first one is, one lives in dependence on a teacher toward whom one has set up a keen sense of moral shame and moral dread, affection and reverence. The second satna quality mentioned in this discourse is living in dependence on a teacher towards satna whom one has set up a keen sense of moral shame and moral dread and affection and reverence. One then on occasion approaches this teacher and asks questions. Questions of clarification about this point of Dhamma, that point of Satna Dhamma, and Satna the teacher then explains. And Satna thus removes difficult satna or knots in the understanding, cuts Satna through perplexity and the like. Now, the third cause and condition for the arising of a particular mental state is to practice withdrawal in body and in mind. Withdrawal in the sense of seclusion, so bodily seclusion and mental seclusion. One intentionally even though one practices in a group, yet satna one does satna not satna seek communication with satna the others. Withdrawal in the mind or seclusion in the mind is in the sense of keeping the mind secluded from the hindrances. Now, that's your third factor, and the fourth one is one is virtuous. So for the monastics, it means one lives in accordance to the monastic vows, the patimokkha, and for a lay retreatant, it means one lives in accordance with the 8 precepts. And also practices satna restraint of the senses. The fifth cause and certain condition is that one has learned much, remembers what one has learned, and accumulates what one has learned. This is accompanied by a factor that we have talked about already in an earlier Dhamma talk, namely, one has aroused energy for abandoning unwholesome qualities and acquiring wholesome qualities. One is strong and satna not flinching. In the midst of the Sangha, one does not engage in rambling and pointless talk. Either one oneself speaks on the Dhamma, or one requests someone else to do so, or otherwise one adopts noble silence. So that's your seventh cause and condition. The question still remains for the arising of what? Now, here comes the last cause and condition. Namely, one dwells contemplating arising and vanishing in the five aggregates, subject to clinging, such is form, such its arising, such its passing away. And the same thing, you know, then applies to feelings, to, you know, perceptions, to volitional formation, so your range of mental factors, and sapna also applies to consciousness. So these eight causes and conditions are conducive to the arising of which mental factor? What's that?
Wisdom.
Yes? And equanimity and wisdom. Any other opinions?
Happiness.
Amy? You don't have an opinion. So, both of you are right with the wisdom. These satna factors, the discourse satna then goes on to say, are causes and conditions that lead to obtaining the wisdom fundamental to the spiritual life when it has not been obtained, and to its increase and maturation and fulfillment by development after it has been obtained. Now, to briefly go over these eight certain conditions one more time. Now, the first one is living in dependence on a teacher. So if you think of our situation here, as retreatants, you live in dependence on, well, food prepared by Surya, by Chris. But you also live in dependence on Marcia and myself. And so in a lay meditation center or monastic meditation center, it would be the same thing. If you think of monasteries, meditation monasteries in Burma, there will be a teacher, there might be even several teachers there, and as a new retreatant, one then sets up a sense of moral shame and moral dread. And sapna has both affection and reverence for the teacher. Now, this already shows a very interesting quality with which Shatna we want to practice, and a quality that contributes towards Shatna, the arising of Shatna, wisdom. So if one would go to a meditation center, and without moral shame, without moral fear, and without affection for the teacher, and no reverence is there, and instead one goes there in order to create havoc and test the capacity of the teacher, ask tricky questions, and so on, doubting each and every point that is being said, well, this is likely to lead to into which mental factor? Skeptical doubt. And such a retreatant might not stay in that center for too long. Now, having established a relationship with a teacher, being living in dependence on a teacher or several teachers, one then does the practice, and on occasion obviously questions come up. And certainly, if you think of the context here, but certainly at any other meditation center, be it lay or monastic, well, on occasion, questions will come up, and you don't quite know what to do. So those questions then can be raised during interviews, could on occasion also be raised after a Dhamma talk or through appointment with a teacher outside of interviews. Now, it's in asking questions that hopefully we get an answer, and the answer then will help us to move ahead. The third quality that certainly contributes or is conducive to the arising of wisdom is certainly that certain seclusion, seclusion in body and seclusion in mind, or expressed here as withdrawal in body and withdrawal in mind. So during an intensive retreat, we do need to change our ways. We need to change our behaviors in certain ways, and one of them is certain, or comes in the form of seclusion of the body and the mind. So this then, this kind of a behavior that is in line with certain seclusion, obviously, differs a lot from a behavior that we would adopt if, let's say, we are participating at a party, let's say a birthday party or whatever. Oh, no, let's say July 4th party. Today is July 4th. So, totally different behavior, different conduct, and the conduct of secluded certain conduct helps us to eventually gain intuitive wisdom. Now, even though one might not have much prior knowledge about meditation and the Buddha's certain teachings, if one can remember the meditation instructions, if one has heard at least a little bit about impermanence and unsatisfactoriness and the insubstantiality of formations, then that might be quite enough to actually do the practice. Now, in the context of a retreat, even if one hasn't heard much Dhamma yet, one will be participating in Dhamma talks and suddenly then hear talks about this or that topic related to mindfulness, meditation. So what one then has heard, one takes to heart, one tries to remember it and hopefully also apply it. So learning it, accumulating and remembering it is certainly one thing, but certainly the application is the important part. Now, possessing these causes and these first five and causes and condition is good, but not certainly good enough, and it clearly takes certain energy or effort. And as outlined in the discourse on effort some time ago, last week, beginning of last week, and then I think it was Saturday of last week. Well, it was mentioned effort in a simple, put in a simple way, consists of arousing energy to abandon unwholesome, unskillful states, and it also consists in arousing wholesome states, arousing and acquiring wholesome states or qualities. So So already with this particular quality, the wisdom that satna arises based on energy, based on the other factors, satna so far is not a type of wisdom that may be some other teacher creates in you, so takes influence and influences you in one way or another, and satna arises, satna sat, in such a manner. So it is a type of wisdom that is satna based on the willingness of a retreatant to exert herself or himself. Now, the seventh cause and condition for the arising of wisdom that is fundamental to the spiritual life, we have to refrain from any kind of useless talk in the midst of the Sangha. So just to talk for the sake of talking. So we give that up, and satna then instead ask, when we're on retreat, and instead ask someone else satna to maybe discourse on the Dhamma, or else we simply stay in or observe noble silence, which is a noble form of satna communication. So with this, again, you can see that satna, there's a huge satna difference here in behavior between a person who is participating in an intensive mindfulness retreat and someone else who is participating in a July 4th party celebration. Party. Now, the final point is important. Namely, that one actually engages in the practice. And here it is via the final point that the connection is made to mindfulness practice, as mindfulness practice as based on the Satipatthana Sutta and other discourses. So one dwells contemplating arising and vanishing in the five aggregates, subject to clinging, such is form, such is such its arising, such its passing away. So these are some factors, or these are eight certain factors that have been outlined, mentioned and satna outlined by the Anguttara Nikaya that conduce satna to the arising of intuitive wisdom. Now, there are other passages satna in the text satna that do discuss this aspect, which factors do contribute to the arising of wisdom. So we have, for instance, the short satna discourse from the Samyutta Nikaya, the 55th satna collection discourse, 55, 62, 63, they are all more or less the same. And so there, 4 points are given: association with superior persons. So this reminds you of which factor that was mentioned among the eight causes and conditions. The first one. There you go. So association with the superior persons is nothing other than associating with, nothing other than living independence, being close to someone who is regarded as a teacher and qualifies as a teacher. Now, the second point mentioned in the this short discourse on the acquisition of wisdom in the Samyutta Nikaya is hearing the true Dhamma. So you hear it from the teacher in the form of Dhamma talks, and then you could also ask questions about certain points that are not clear. Now, the third point mentioned is careful attention or wise attention, yoniso manasikara, in the Pali scriptural language. So it happens for many people who feel close to the Buddha's teachings that they happily sit in during a Dhamma talk and listen to the talk, but there's no real wise attention there. So they let the mind roam around or roam about, and maybe hearing this or that point, but the Dhamma is not really being absorbed. The final point is that of practice in accordance with the Dhamma. So actually doing it, actually applying what one has heard. Now, there's a different discourse in the Samyutta Nikaya, the so-called Alavaka Sutta, that contains just one, among different topics, one line of question raised by Alavaka on wisdom, namely, Alavaka asks, how does one gain wisdom? And suddenly, in response to this sudden question, then the Buddha answers as follows, as is given in verse 851, namely, placing faith in the Dhamma of the Arahants. For the attainment of Nibbana, from desire to learn, one gains sudden wisdom, and if one is diligent and astute. So here, a few factors are being mentioned, some similar to those we've heard already, some different. One factor that certainly is new in the context of our discussion is faith. So one lives in dependence on a teacher. Obviously, this only happens if one has some initial faith in that certain teacher. Otherwise, it wouldn't be so likely. Faith in the teacher or faith in the Buddha's certain teachings. Now, interesting is also, from a desire to learn, one gains sudden wisdom. So one desires to learn the Dhamma that sudden leads to liberating wisdom. And sudden we could add desire not only to learn, but sudden desire also to then actually do the practice and realize all of this. Now, being diligent, appamatto in Pali, means that one is constantly mindful, and sapnya, being astute, means that sapnya one can discern between what is well spoken and sapnya what is sapnya not. Now, these are already more than eight certain factors that conduce to the arising of the wisdom that is fundamental to the spiritual life. And to make the connection to Marcia's Dhamma talk given yesterday, Can you see any other factors that would contribute, you know, to the arising of wisdom? Okay. So concentration, indeed. And the concentration is just floating around. It comes naturally.
Yeah.
Namely?
Sati.
Sati, mindfulness, and?
Of factors of enlightenment,
I don't even need to reach that far. Well, what about virtue and being established in an ethical conduct? This satna being one of the really very, very basic things. So, in other words, as explained already last night by Deb Marcia, the training of the training in ethical conduct, sila seka, in the Pali scripture language, and based on which then the training concentration falls follows samadhi seka, and based on those first two, then we engage in the training in wisdom panya seka. So it is sapnya, by being well established in ethical conduct, that we not transgress in this way or that way. As heard last night, the benefit of this is that the mind will not be overwhelmed by. By what? There you go, remorse, guilt, sapnya, worry, which agitate the mind. With an agitated mind, a mind full of remorse, guilt, and sapnya, the like, it's very difficult to practice. So, with remorse, the mind will be agitated, will be distracted. And a distracted mind is everything but sapnya concentrated. Now, if, however, we are well established in virtue, then we are not transgressing in one way or another. As a result, there's no need for the arising of remorse. As a result of this, the mind will not be agitated, but rather concentrated, free of distraction. Avikepa in the Pali scriptural, Avikepa Samadhi in the Pali scriptural language. And based on our virtue in both body and mind, and a mind that is then well concentrated, based on those two trainings, then knowledge can arise. And then we obtain the knowledge that is fundamental to the spiritual life. Now, when it comes to factors that lead to the arising of this wisdom fundamental to the spiritual life, we can also look at a slightly different sets of or different teaching that the Buddha has mentioned on many occasions, and that is mentioned here and there in the texts, namely the gradual path of training. The gradual path of training starts out with the arising of some it starts out with hearing the Dhamma in one way or another, or maybe having a friend talk about it, or read about the Dhamma, so something like this, and that satna then leads to the arising of some initial faith. That initial faith will, for the most part, still be relatively strong or weak. Weak. So it's still pretty shaky, and certainly it does certainly need to be nurtured over time. Now, the relevant passage to the gradual, or that talks about the gradual path of training, then goes on to say based on the arising of some initial faith, then it's quite likely that right thought will occur in our stream of consciousness in the form of thoughts of renunciation. Not, it could mean that suddenly right away one decides to become a monastic and suddenly join the order. It could mean that for very few. But for the majority, it could mean that suddenly at least one is prepared to renounce one's life, one's laid life of a householder for a limited period of time. So let's say for a period of 7 days or 10 days, during which one then would go and attend a retreat. So for that period of time, one pulls oneself out of one's normal context and thus renounces one's ordinary comfort and luxury. So the arising of this much of right thoughts is great, and sooner or later one might certainly feel compelled, well, life is still not quite perfect yet. I have not gained what I'm looking for, searching for, and what if I start transforming my conduct, and suddenly then a certain willingness to take upon oneself and closely follow the precepts, ethical precepts, might suddenly then follow. Once one is well established in virtue, and part of this establishment in virtue is also that one starts restraining one's senses. So even though one has eyes to see with, one doesn't look around unintentionally, and even though one has ears to hear with, one doesn't listen to each and every sound that comes along. So indriya samvara sila in the Pali scripture language. And this then gets complemented by the act, by actually engaging in mindfulness practice and certainly clear comprehension of what one is certainly just about to do or say. Gradually, with the practice of mindfulness and based on the factors mentioned so far, one is likely to first encounter the five hindrances and gradually to overcome those hindrances. With this satna, then one reaches a certain degree of concentration, and the concentration then in turn, as we've seen, becomes one of the two proximate factors for the arising of wisdom. Wisdom that suddenly then is fundamental to living the spiritual life. In terms of the controlling new faculties with some extension, or as more so as based on the Chanki Sutta that was mentioned already in the context of the talk on effort, we have yet another serial order of factors that leads the one factor leading on to the next, and the first one is the arising of faith. So you're familiar with this one, that this might certainly lead on, or is likely to lead on, to the arising of certain desire to practice, maybe at first desire to study, and then followed by the desire to practice. This sapna then paves sapna the way for a proper aiming of the mind, so aiming the mind towards sapna, the predominant object of observation that is arising. And sapna, this needs to be supplemented by effort, application of sapna effort. And sapna, when these sapna two factors are present plus the earlier new ones, then mindfulness is likely to arise and will be sustained if the effort is also equally sustained over time. This in turn leads to concentration, and again, your concentration leads on to the rising of wisdom. Now, sometimes when we try to understand a certain mental factor, what it's all about, what its nature is all about, it can be quite helpful to look at aspects that this mental factor is not about. So, the nature of wisdom, to first sadhana state a few negative aspects, is not cunningness. For sure, not. And sadhana, the wisdom that we're talking about sadhana here is also not a type of wisdom that sadhana is based on the prolific use of the intellect. So it's not that. Now, it's further not a form of, or it's further not based on and not identical with thinking. So people who are new to the meditation practice, mindfulness practice, might on occasion think that thinking equals wisdom. So they happily sit there with eyes closed and let the mind roam freely. And suddenly, I mean, all sorts of thoughts and reflections might come up, also a few on what is happening in the meditation. And suddenly, those thoughts, those reflections are being proudly shared during the interview. And then being presented as certain forms of deep wisdom. Obviously, this is wisdom or not? It's not. So, there is a further type of wisdom, namely that certain wisdom or knowledge that sadhana could be just broadly referred sadhana to as hearsay, or knowledge, facts and figures that one hears during a university lecture or a class at school, or maybe some academic workshop, or things that one reads in a book. And part of this sadhana then might be holding on to concepts and then reading about certain presentations of the Dhamma, and thinking that those are the same as true wisdom. So that kind of knowledge again is not identical with wisdom that is fundamental to the spiritual life. If that were the case, all we needed to you do would be to go or attend some university and do some take some courses on Buddhism. So Buddhist philosophy, maybe some Pali studies, and so, maybe some Abhidhamma studies, and so on and so forth. But it's not certainly the same. Now, what satna then is wisdom that is fundamental to the spiritual life? Just off your mind, what would you say? What is it then? If it's not thinking, if it's not hearing, if it's not knowledge based on book reading, there's not much left. Ah, so we could refer to it as intuitive wisdom, but we could also refer to it in still different terms. Do other terms come to your mind?
Direct experience.
Direct experience, yes, rather than, let's say, some conceptual knowledge, rather than some constructs or intellectual models, or getting lost in abstract satna ideas, or getting lost in an entire philosophical thought system. So direct experience, intuitive wisdom or knowledge, anything else satna that comes to your mind? In connection with wisdom, what else is it doing? What else is it known for?
Penetrating the true nature.
Penetrating the true nature of formations. And certainly so, going really deeply, going beyond the surface or the superficial appearance of things. Now, to ask a leading question, the wisdom that we're talking about here, is it a wisdom that happily accepts unwholesome mental states and dwells in them and indulges in them and makes them to grow? Is that certain? Do you connect that to wisdom? Obviously not. So, what comes up in connection with wisdom is not only a wisdom that is penetrative and has a discriminative quality to it, but also a wisdom that cuts satna through layers and layers of satna ignorance and satna various unwholesome mental states, unskillful mental states. Now, there's still more to it. The wisdom that is fundamental to the spiritual life, does it arise just by, let's say, doing a hike in the forest? Casually walking around? Trying to reach the peak of a mountain? Is this how your wisdom arises? It's not. So it is a form, it's a mental state, mental factor, that arises out of practicing under certain circumstances. As we have seen earlier on, we live in dependence on a teacher, we then ask questions, we then try to live in a secluded manner, we try as much as possible to be virtuous in our conduct, We try to learn the Dhamma as much as possible and try to remember it. And satnya, then we arouse energy, effort, in order to abandon unwholesome states and to bring about wholesome states. We refrain from useless satnya talk and unrelated satnya talk, talk that is not related to Dhamma. And satnya, finally, we then carefully, we don't just walk or go on a hike in nature, but rather we spend our time in a secluded place, mindfully sitting, walking, being mindful during general activities. So what I'm trying to get at is that the wisdom is a is a mental factor that arises out of mental development, out of actually doing the practice from moment to moment to moment, over several days, many days, sometimes even weeks or months. So this kind of wisdom, in which is based on mental development, in the Pali scriptural language, is known as bhavana maya panya. Bhavana is your mental development, and satnya maya panya is satnya knowledge or wisdom based on. So, based on mental development. So, with this much, it becomes pretty obvious that satnya, the wisdom that we're talking about, satnya here, that the Buddha had in mind, is a wisdom that is quite certainly different from knowledge being passed on at a university or some other place, educational facility. Now, we could certainly take this point even a step further by saying that it's also a wisdom that arises in a gradual manner, in an actually pretty well described and certainly defined manner, and that consists of certain stages, and satnya, those stages of purification, we sudhi in the Pali scriptural manner, Pali scriptural language, are referred satnya to as first the purification of satnya, one's morality, so ensuring that satna one observes satna or practices right speech, right action, and right satna livelihood. Then the purification, this in Pali is known as sila visuddhi. Then the next satna purification is of the mind, and citta visuddhi, which means ensuring that the mind becomes more and more concentrated. This, just generally speaking, could be done in two ways, by either engaging in samatha meditation, and thus concentration arises, or one does dry and straightforward vipassana meditation, and in the context of this, the so-called kanika samadhi, momentary concentration arises, using different objects of ultimate satna nature as objects of observation. Now, when as satna the mind becomes more concentrated, and suddenly the hindrances are likely to be there, with a more concentrated mind, one then gradually, and as Venerable Sadhu Pandita notes, also with the help of effort and mindfulness, one gradually overcomes those hindrances. So with concentration, to be very specific, the hindrances get suppressed. With mindfulness, the mind satna gets will be protected, and satna with effort, the hindrances will be kept at bay. Now, as one then continues to practice, one will eventually, one will start to discern the various objects, satna, that come up in one's satna meditation, and among the physical sensations, one will discern one sensation to be tension, another sensation to be tightness, another one to be heat, or yet another one to be cold. And then one might suddenly discern, oh, there are also mental objects there. Joy is there. Another mental object might be discerned as happiness. Another one could be discerned as tranquility, and so on and so forth. So one comes to gradually see the specific qualities of or the specific qualities of an object, and that eventually leads a retreatant to understand that satna, there are just two basic categories of objects, namely bodily formations and mental formations. So just nama and rupa phenomena, just mentality and materiality. Now, this satna, already seeing the specific quality of an object, is a form of very simple knowledge, wisdom. Seeing that in the end there are just these physical and mental formations happening, this too is a form of intuitive, liberating, penetrating knowledge. Seeing the interdependence of mentality and materiality, again, would be an aspect of intuitive wisdom. Now, with further practice, this particular understanding, then is suddenly referred to as the purification of view, deity, visuddhi, in the Pali scriptural language. Sooner or later, this purification is followed by yet a different purification, namely known as purification of overcoming doubt, namely doubt into whether a creator is there or not there, and what is oneself in control of things, control of the show, or how are things happening? Was I in the past? Will I be in the future? And so on. So these kind of doubts that satna might arise, those get suddenly cleared by actually seeing in very direct satna ways that satna formations are connected by, or one might see how one object or several conditions then are the cause, and satna, there's a certain result satna to it. So one sees both the one or several causes and then a certain result. Now, with further practice, a retreatant is sooner or later likely to then experience what the Visuddhimagga refers to as the purification by knowledge and vision of what is path and what is not path. This refers to a very particular experience or phase in one's meditation where retreatants are kind of like at a crossroads. So there's an option either to go this way or that way. And the two roads are either when wholesome mental states arise, such as illumination, such as knowledge, and then joy and tranquility and happiness and so on and so forth, to either get totally attached to these states, crave for these states, indulge in them, that's one path. And the other path, the no path, is simply to remember to be just mindful of those states, not to get carried away by them, not to get attached to them, not to crave for them, and so on. And that then leads to a deeper practice. So this particular phase is referred to as the purification by overcoming, purification by knowledge and vision of what is path and not path, magamaganyana dasna visuddhi in the Pali scriptural language. This then is followed by two more purifications. One is purification of the mind, which contains or covers quite an area. We don't have the time to go into this. And finally, we have the purification by knowledge and vision, jnana dasana nivisuddhi, in the Pali scriptural language. So, knowledge that gradually arises in the course of our mindfulness by way of more purifying the mind. This can be considered knowledge or wisdom that is fundamental to the spiritual life. Now, what we have said so far then nicely resonates with various definitions given in the Dhamma Sanghani for wisdom. And there it speaks of right view, and right view then gets defined as wisdom, and then as thorough understanding, scrutiny of, if you like, to first the permanence of phenomena, the assumed permanence, the assumed happiness that is connected with formations, and the assumed aspect of the existence of a self, or that for phenomena are identical with a self. So carefully scrutinizing this, it's also referred to as an investigative knowledge of the Dhamma. So one carefully investigates what is really going on. It's further referred to as discriminative knowledge. So getting to see what is what, getting to know the various bodily formations, getting to know and to discern the various mental states. Then, as comparative examination, maybe this could be put in slightly different words in the English language, as contrasting certain formations, contrasting, let's say, an unwholesome state with a wholesome state. And suddenly, then, out of this contrast, better understanding the respective wholesomeness state. Or, in line with what was asked earlier on, wisdom that destroys mental defilements. So, wisdom, the effort to abandon unwholesome mental states, and not only to abandon, but to destroy them. Wisdom that is referred to as penetrative wisdom, insight, clear comprehension, which is usually an initial or incipient form of satna wisdom, the faculty of wisdom, the power of wisdom. And satna then varied that nicely in the connection with wisdom for destroying defilements, wisdom that is like a sword, wisdom that cuts satna through what? Through anger and through the many layers, thick layers of ignorance. And sapnya then there's yet another quality that is being attributed to wisdom. And satna, this satna, some of you might remember when you think of the classical fourfold satna definition of wisdom. And the function of wisdom there is given as to illuminate the objective field. So in other words, to illuminate the field of objects of observation. Now, this to illuminate the field of objects of observation involves what? Light. And wisdom is spoken of as certainly being different from ignorance, which is associated with darkness. So there is mention of the light of wisdom and the darkness of ignorance. So, not practicing at all, not being, never having heard the Buddha's Satna Dhamma, never having trained in virtue and concentration, never having actually practiced mindfulness, we are likely to live in a state of darkness, namely the darkness of ignorance. We just can't discern what is really going on. We might think that we know an awful lot. We might think of ourselves extremely highly, yet certainly that kind of thinking is pretty deluded. And basically, we find ourselves in a space of darkness, and it is comparable to being in a dark room that one has never been in. And it's full of furniture here and there, like a storage room. You walk into the room, there's no electricity there, and then you bump into a chair, you bump into a table, and so eventually, with your head, you might even bump into a wall. So that certain kind of thing happens certain because there's no light. If one brings a flashlight into that same room, one can see exactly what is certain where, and certainly then can avoid bumping into these different items. Now, wisdom is certainly classically said to have the characteristic of penetrating objects according to their intrinsic nature, according to their essential nature. So going really deep and suddenly then penetrating and discovering what is actually going on. So not just getting caught up in superficial appearances of formations, but rather to investigate, and in the course of this, then discovering that actually things are quite different. And now, as mentioned, the function is to illuminate satna, the field of objects. Its satna manifestation is as non-confusion, amoha in the Pali scriptural language, or as absence of bewilderment, non-bewilderment. Now, two proximate causes have been mentioned for the arising of wisdom, and one is given as wise attention. Wise attention, which is directed towards the arising development of intuitive wisdom again and again. So one conducts oneself in ways that are conducive to the arising of wisdom. And knowing that other circumstances, other forms of conduct are not helpful, so attaining a July 4th party might not be all that great, and so then one doesn't go in that direction. Now, the second proximate cause that for the arising of intuitive wisdom was mentioned already during the previous Dhamma talk yesterday by Marcia, namely it comes in the form of a unified mind, a mind that is collected, a mind that is concentrated. And that concentrated mind is the foundation for the arising of a different mental state with different qualities, different nature, and that wisdom. Now, if the series of mental factors that lead up to concentration would end with concentration, well, this might be good to some extent. We'll end up with a concentrated mind, yet the concentration itself will not touch the mental defilements. So what it takes is, especially in order to eradicate, to destroy, to cut off the latent mental defilements, we need wisdom. We need the power of wisdom. We need the power that cuts up through those latent defilements. Now, since we're already way beyond our normal time, and there's still more to be said on wisdom, allow me to conclude today's Satna Dhamma talk on wisdom with a Dhammapada verse. Namely, indeed, it's verse 282, indeed, wisdom is born of meditation. Without meditation, wisdom is lost. Knowing this twofold path of the gain and loss of wisdom, one should conduct oneself so that wisdom may increase, may arise and increase. So, to add to this, may much wisdom arise, and may it be penetrative wisdom, may it turn into liberating wisdom that leads us to the realization of the path of holiness. May this happen during this existence or some future existence. And this is it for today.